I love winter. No, really. I need to make that clear before I move into the rest of this. I do. I love winter. I especially love to be out on a crisp winter day, especially when the sky is that amazing clear blue and the sun is bright. Low in the sky, maybe, but bright. I take my dog out for a walk early every morning, and there's this particular corner that I turn that faces me directly towards the recently risen sun over the lake that I'm lucky enough to live near. Every day I stop there for just a couple of moments after turning that corner with the sun. The sun doesn't do that. With the sun right in front of me. Until this point, I'd been walking kind of like this, right, hunched into my coat. But now, facing the sun, I lift my chin up out of my collar. I let the sunshine land on my whole face. Involuntarily, I take a deep breath, and I smile. It's a moment in which I'm given a gift. It fills me. And whatever happens for the rest of that day, I have a moment I can come back to. So on Thursday morning this past week, around 10 o'clock or so, with my early dog walk 2 hours behind me, I just completed the getting ready to go outside ritual for the second time that morning. You know, the lacing up of the boots and the putting on of the coat and the finding the right hat and is gloves or mittens the right thing today? I hadn't really looked out the window, and so when I opened the door and that morning sunshine had been replaced by falling snow, I was a little surprised at both that and my response, which was to grumpily mutter, "Crap, now it's snowing too." I laugh now. It took only a few minutes to recognize my grumpiness as a clue that it was time to get out the happy light. In Northwest Indiana, where I lived before Madison, the winter sky is almost always gray and snowy due to the lake effect and the steel mill emissions, and so I used to start using my happy light in November. I was used to this. It was routine. I would start to feel tired all the time, disconnected from the people in my life, harder and harder to feel good about anything. And that's when I knew it was time to sit in front of my artificial sunlight. It really does improve my outlook. I used to not talk about using my happy light. That came partly out of shame. Shame that I needed help to function in a healthy way. And it came partly out of knowing that there were people out there in the world, people I probably knew pretty well, that had full-blown seasonal affective disorder, and that the grumpiness and the disconnection I felt was just a mild shadow of what they were going through. It didn't feel valid to claim needing that light. I've come to think differently about this since. I think it's important to tell people what ails us and what we're doing to relieve those ailments. I think all suffering is significant to the people doing the suffering, regardless of its depth. And I've found that when I share something hard that's happened to me, more often than not, I open the way for someone to say, "Hey, that happened to me too, and I've never been able to talk about it before." Or, "You know, I felt that way too when I had to deal with this thing in my life." We help ease our suffering and that of others when we allow each other access to ourselves. I'd even go so far as to say that it's a spiritual practice to share our hurts and our fears. Because I believe that it's a theological statement when we say we are not alone. Because for me, what I call God, and you've heard this from me before, what I call God arises from within us and between us. And that spirit or that energy arises more strongly between us when we invite it through our sharing. And this is good. And it's important. Just like making up stories about objects to exercise our imaginations and to tell each other something about ourselves through inference in that practice. Sharing our own real stories helps us to imagine the possibility of other points of view. It promotes flexibility of spirit, the ability to see beyond our own ideas and even begin to bend our ideas into something different, to grow them into something bigger and maybe even more open. I've also recently revitalized my yoga practice, which had gotten interrupted by child rearing and seminary and other things after practicing pretty consistently for about 15 years. And I've noticed several things about this starting over. First, my muscles are sore the day after a class in a way that I seem to have forgotten. Second, I remember the names of all of the asanas and what they look like when they're fully executed. And third, my body also remembers the asanas. There's a physical memory that's evoked unconsciously when I start to move my body in ways that I once practiced, even after a long break. Practice is the word that's important here. I don't just do yoga, I practice it. Every day that I practice it, it feels different. My body feels different, and the way that my body and my spirit interact when I practice feels different. The physical flexibility that I find when I'm consistent with my yoga practice is a benefit of that practice. I'm generally kind of bendy to begin with, like Quinn with his fingers. That's what he was doing with when I asked him to show flexibility. He was bending his fingers back. But what the practice part of it gives me is the time and the space to focus on how I hold my body and how my spirit is in relationship with that. Emotional and spiritual flexibility are the same way. They're a practice. It doesn't just happen that we're flexible. How flexible we are depends on how we hold the time and space to practice how we hold our spirits and how they are in relationship with each other's spirits. This practice is work. Just as a yogi with decades of practice in their life seems to be able to move seamlessly on their mat, so do we learn to live and move through our lives when we practice spiritual flexibility. I can think of several aspects to what that practice might look like. The first is faith. Not faith necessarily as other religious traditions describe it, because for me, faith is not about what you believe. Faith is about trust. Regardless of what you believe, faith is about your trust in what you believe. Putting our trust into what we believe takes practice, and it takes practice in community. What I believe, that can be developed on my own. I can read, I can have solitary experiences of the spirit. I used to spend lots of time alone in the woods or on the beach, opening up myself to those gifts. But this didn't teach me about trust. I had to be in relationship with people for that. My faith, the depth to which I hold those beliefs and the trust I place in them, isn't as applicable when I'm on my own. Because for me, God is present when we live together in a way that promotes and supports our opening. God is in the relationships we make together, and God is more accessible to us when we're conscious of how we make those relationships. This requires a second aspect of spiritual flexibility, that of curiosity. When we're curious about each other and the world around us, we tend to be more open to what we might learn. So part of the practice, the spiritual practice, is asking curious questions, listening deeply, and resisting that human urge to seek safety in certainty. Writer and political activist Anne Lamott has written, "I remembered something Father Tom had told me, that the opposite of faith is not doubt, but certainty. Certainty is missing the point entirely. Faith includes noticing the mess, the emptiness and discomfort, and letting it be there until some light returns." Curiosity is crucial to building faith. practicing curiosity means keeping our minds and hearts open to hearing things outside of our own perspective, which allow us to widen that perspective and be more inclusive of people who aren't like us. This requires the third aspect of spiritual flexibility, vulnerability. The Quaker activist, educator, and author Parker Palmer writes about vulnerability. He says, heartbreak is an inevitable and painful part of life. But there are at least two ways for the heart to break. It can break open into a new life, or break apart into shards of sharper and more widespread pain. A brittle heart will explode into a thousand pieces and sometimes get thrown like a fragment grenade at the perceived source of its pain. There's a lot of that going around these days, he says. But a supple heart will break open into greater capacity to hold life's suffering and its joy in a way that allows us to say, the pain stops here. So how do we get our hearts to be supple? We practice. Brené Brown is a shame and vulnerability researcher, and she talks about an idea she calls wholeheartedness, learning to transcend shame, which she calls the fear of disconnection. Shame as the fear of disconnection through the practice of opening our hearts. Vulnerability is the key to this. Dr. Brown says that it's the core of shame and fear and our struggle for worthiness, but it appears it's also the birthplace of joy, of creativity, of belonging, of love. And so we try to hide our vulnerability by numbing our shame and our fear and our disappointment, but Dr. Brown says you can't numb those hard feelings without numbing the other affects, our emotions. You cannot selectively numb. So when we numb those, we also numb joy and gratitude and happiness. And then we are miserable. And we are looking for purpose and meaning. And then we feel vulnerable, so then we have a couple of beers and a banana nut muffin. She sets up that cycle really well. And we stop then having conversations in favor of assigning blame when we're in that cycle, which she calls a way to discharge pain and discomfort. The better way, she says, is this: to let ourselves be seen, deeply seen, vulnerably seen, to practice gratitude and joy in those moments of terror and to believe we're enough. Because when we work from a place that says, I'm enough, then we stop screaming and we start listening. We're kinder and gentler to the people around us, and we're kinder and gentler to ourselves. In other words, in my words, we give ourselves and others grace. When we practice flexibility in our bodies, we find that we move with more grace. When we practice spiritual flexibility, we open up the space for grace to move into our lives, and we give that grace to each other. Like turning my face toward the sun for a gift, when I'm able to practice faith, curiosity, and vulnerability here in community, I find grace. May it be so for all, and may we be so.